When you stop to think about it, the 1960s really featured the second act of the Civil War. The first act ended slavery, but 100 years later, millions of Americans were still working to get their full rights as citizens, and lots of organizations formed to fight for those civil rights. They included the Black Panther Party, founded in Oakland, California in 1966 by Huey Newton and Bobby Seale. Huey Newton died more than 25 years ago, but Bobby Seale is still with us, talking about what motivated him then and now. He speaks tonight at 6 at the Music Recital Hall at Southern Oregon University, and he's our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Bobby Seale, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yes. It's a pleasure to have you here. I know you're here partly to coincide, I guess, with Black History Month, and I know at least a few comedians have remarked ruefully that, wouldn't you know it, Black History Month is the shortest month of the year, February, at 28 days. Did you ever make that connection yourself?
Yeah, well, originally it was a Black History Week, and everybody kicked it to me. Says, what do you mean a week to tell the history? And everybody kicked it to a month.
50 years ago, when you think about Black history, your own history, did you think much about where you'd be today?
I thought I'd be dead a couple of times, you know. I mean, these guys really came after us. We went out there. You have to understand, we popped up there in 1966. But even myself, it was really prior to that. You know, actually, I was in the high-tech world. You know, I worked at Gemini Missile Program.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
right.
Engineering Department, Electromagnetic Field, Black Light, Non-Destruct Testing for all engine frames for the Gemini Missile Program when they were popping the satellites up. And I got interested in the Civil Rights Movement, you know what I mean? And I went to hear Dr. Martin Luther King speak in 1962 at the Oakland Auditorium, 7,000 people. I'm one student, but I'm working full-time at night on the Gemini Missile Program. And he's talking about all these companies and they won't hire people of color at all. And we have to boycott these companies. And he got on the bread companies in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I remember him so bad. And Langendorf Bread Company and Kilpatrick's Bread Company here in the San Francisco Oakland Bay Area refused to hire any people of color. He says, and all across America, he says, Wonder Bread refuses. He says, we're going to have to boycott them. And we want to boycott them so consistently and so profoundly, we want to make Wonder Bread wonder where the money went. And this audience, 7,000 people, I'm one individual. I'm totally inspired by this guy, Martin Luther King. And that's what kicked it for me. You know, a year later, I didn't quit my job. I'm working in the grassroots community. I create a youth jobs program with other students, 3 Black and 3 white students. We've been out there with some canvas and stuff. But that, I went out there, and the next thing I know, we put together this tutorial program, a youth jobs program. Today, several years ago, the city government of Richmond, California, gives me a proclamation for creating the first youth jobs program in North Richmond. But this all preceded the Black Panther Party, you see. And then I'm at Merritt College, you know, anyway, so I'm an engineer and design major, but I'm beginning to shift a bit. Point is I got Black American history into the curriculum at Merritt College, me and some other friends who organized with me, Virtual Morrell and others. And boom, Huey wasn't even there. You know what I mean? Then I went to work for the city government of Oakland, California, Department of Human Resources. I was a community liaison for the North Oakland Neighborhood Services, and I was the supervisor for the youth jobs program there. And in effect, I hired Huey because he was running around doing some little cheap criminal stuff, although he was in law school at the time. I mean, he writes about this in his own book, you know. I'm just saying. So I hired the guy to keep him from doing this stuff, you know what I mean? I hired him at the North Oakland. In effect, what happens is I recite a poem at around University of California on Hay Street on Telegraph, et cetera, one night, et cetera. Uncle Sammy called me full of Lucifer. That's the first line of the poem, and that, in effect, is the title of the poem. This poem is an anti-war poem. I'm not going to let Uncle Sammy draft me in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it causes a commotion. A lot of people just gathered around. They blocked the sidewalk saying, more, 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 when I cited. And some undercover policeman, who I didn't know was a policeman, walks up and says, you're under arrest for using obscene language. I says, man, later for you. We won in the courts. We can say the F word all we want to, blah, blah, blah. And the next thing I know, I'm getting attacked by undercovers, et cetera. Then a uniform comes in. Through this big crowd, the people hollering, leave him alone, he's done nothing. I mean, it's a big protest going on while I'm getting my butt whipped down here by 3 or 4 of these undercover cops. But anyway, I get a loose, and I pull out this scout knife I had. I had 9 or 10 scout knives and all my different trades and skills, et cetera. And I happened to have one, and I pulled it out, and I cut this guy in the hand when it originally attacked me, et cetera. Anyway, they arrested us, boom, and put us in jail, got bailed out, et cetera. Went before the court, and I told Judge Stats, I work for the city government of Oakland, California. It's not about crime. I was reciting a poem, and these undercovers did not show a badge and attack. Anyway, the judge went with me and gave us probation. I told Huey, I says, we've been talking about writing a new program for a new organization. So I told him to get down to the Warm Poverty Office tonight. We're going to do that. And we wrote our first draft for our 10-point program. We wanted full employment as one point. We wanted decent housing another point. We wanted decent education that taught us our true history another point. We wanted preventative medical health care. We wanted to be exempt from any military service because we've been fighting all these wars since the beginning of this country, and this country is not recognizing our constitutional, democratic, civil, human rights. We want an end to police brutality and murder of black people. We want black folks and us to have juries with some black folks on it that represents the average reasoning person in the black community and so on. We want land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, and peace. And we summed it up with the first two paragraphs of the Declaration of Independence, United States of America. We paraphrased it, you know. And me, you know, I'm a comedian. I'm a jazz drummer, stage actor. Did a lot of stuff besides high tech, you know, architect, engineering design, Gemini missile, structural repair, high-performance aircraft, blah, blah, blah. I had a lot of trades and skills. I was very, very lucky. Okay, bang. But my point is that I could take the Declaration of Independence, you know, and do a John Wayne. When in the course of human events, you know, bang. Or Martin Luther King. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You see what I mean? And put over and try to inspire. That's a communicative thing. I guess I have an ability to do that. And we started this organization and decided we were going to patrol the police as a tactic to capture their imagination in the community. We did have rampant police brutality. Think about police brutality today, even what you see, et cetera, et cetera. It was 50 times worse then. And a lot of it was not even reported. It didn't even get to the news, et cetera.
Because it was just a regular thing.
It was rampant and totally unchecked. So we went out, legal guns, because she was 2 years in law school. We knew every law on the guns. Now, people say, oh, you just picked up guns. And I said, wait a minute, man. We were talking about self-defense. Because why? Numerous protesters were being shot, killed, murdered. Protest movement. These were peaceful protests. And we went by the First Amendment of the Constitution that says all citizens have a right to peacefully assemble and to peacefully redress their grievances. We supported the right to peaceful protests. All we said is that if you come down here brutalizing and shooting at us without cause, whatever, et cetera, boom, 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 we're going to defend ourselves. But before that all happened, we went out to patrol and observe the police. Police says, you have no right to observe me. And my friend Huey says, no, California State Supreme Court ruling states that every citizen has a right to stand and observe a police officer carrying out their duty as long as they stand a reasonable distance away. A reasonable distance in that particular ruling is constituted as 8 to 10 feet. I'm standing approximately 20 feet from you and we'll observe you whether you like it or not. This blows the cop's mind because he starts looking around. It's 14 of us. We all have guns. Now, remember, we know the laws and the guns. We can't point these guns. These guns are not pointing at this cop. You see what I mean? We know that under the law, if you point a weapon, and under California law at the time, if you point a weapon to somebody, you have a live round in the chamber, it constitutes assault with a deadly weapon. Even if you're just playing around with it, it constitutes assault with a deadly weapon. We know every law you're in. You cannot ride in the car with a live round in the chamber of a rifle or a shotgun. Do not apply to a handgun. We know all of this stuff. So when we're there telling this cop the law that we have a right to stand because there had been a Supreme Court ruling or something, is that gun loaded? If I know it's loaded, it's good. Well, I have right. You have no right whatsoever. Huey took off in some Supreme Court ruling, somebody versus whoever, et cetera. Therefore, this is my private property. You cannot remove my private property from me without due process of law. Step back. You cannot touch my weapon. And a lot of people standing on the sidewalk, tall black guy, he said, man, what kind of Negroes is these? They'd never seen this. A disciplined group, only one person talking, which was Huey. I'm observing, et cetera. All the others there, et cetera, boom, boom, boom. The cop gets his arrestee, who's standing there with his hand on the back of a trunk, probably a traffic ticket or something, but and puts him in the car, but he leaves. Little kids come around and other people. And so I says, ladies and gentlemen, people on the sidewalk, 30, 40, 50 of them then gather. I said, we're a new organization, the Black Panther Party. We're going to organize this community. We're going to organize the community, and we're going to unify all the votes in the community, and we're going to take a lot of these old racist city councilmen out of there, and we're going to change the laws in the city charter, and we're going to have a new... This is what why we went out to patrol the police. Now, legally, we patrol and observe police for 6.5 months. Then the California state legislature made a law that said you couldn't carry a loaded weapon inside city limits within 150 feet of public property. Naturally, we're not going to go out there with unloaded weapons. Mm-hmm. And we told people on the radio stations and stuff, hey, we're going to observe the police from our windows, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So you can see how we got started. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to show people there's been too many distortions about how we did this, what we did. This was not some old macho crap or nothing like that. People was very disciplined. I taught all these people, me and a few others who had been ex-military, how to handle weapons, what weapons were about, the safety of weapons, et cetera, how to clean and put together weapons. Some, they had never been in the military. I had, you know, myself, Richard Ioki, a Japanese buddy and friend, big man, Elbert Howard, you know. These were the early people. Anyway, that's how we got started.
Bobby Seale's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, one of the co-founders of the Black Panther Party. He'll be speaking at Southern Oregon University tonight. You can join us here in the Exchange now, 800-838-3760, around the region and the Rogue Valley. Same number, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We have a call. Here's Ann in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Bobby Seale.
Thank you. I am constantly amazed how white journalists, for the most part, ignore the amount of racism in this country. For example, I think if President Obama was a white male Republican, his poll numbers would be at least 20 points higher. And yet, I almost never hear any broadcast journalist mention that we're still fighting the Civil War. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate that. Thoughts, Bobby?
Yeah, we were still fighting the Civil War, that Civil War. When I remember Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois's documentation in his book Black Reconstruction, he pointed out that midway through that war, the Emancipation Proclamation came out, five states with heavy Confederate resistance, where the slave was thenceforever forth free with the Emancipation Proclamation. The very next line, under and thenceforth forth free, says all able-bodied black men will be taken into the Northern Union Army. 168,000 black men and slaves were armed, put in uniform, etc., in a matter of months. And all those other blacks and who came across the lines, etc., to support another 100,000, who kicked the Confederates' butts? Those black soldiers. And those races have not gotten over it yet. They hate us to death. I mean, I'm trying to say it's not just because of the color of skin that we, and that was a mark by which institutionalized slavery did, but the very ending of slavery and the very slaves themselves turn into soldiers is what happened there. That's how that war was won. And Abraham Lincoln said it at the tail end of the war. If it had not been for the black man, we would not have won this war. That's the most important thing. And I love it. They got the 13th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment, all of this, ending slavery and due process of law, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. And then we had the first black congressman in the Reconstruction period immediately following the Civil War. You know, like 7 or 8 of them there was duly elected to office. So we're still trying to deal with this. And then when I started in the middle of the 50s, that was only 50 black folks throughout the whole of the United States of America duly elected to political office that I could count, including Adam Clayton Plow and one black senator from, I think, from Boston, Massachusetts.
Edward Brooke, uh-huh.
Yeah. That was what was happening. So when I said we were going to unify our votes in the community and get some more political seats, you see, a year before we started the Black Panther Party, the big hullabaloo was black power, black power, black power. They're just shouting some advocacy phrases. I said, wait a minute, what is power? Power is the ability to define phenomena, then in turn make it act in a desired manner. What phenomena am I defining? I'm defining these racist politicians who've made laws, et cetera, city charters, what have you, county seats, supervisorial seats, et cetera, that perpetuates exploitation, perpetuates levels of discrimination, et cetera. we have to have political policies. So unifying the people around programs, not only around the fact that we had patrol police, I created the free breakfast for children program, the free health clinics program, the free sickle cell anemia testing program, cooperative housing program. Well, that was really my baby in the whole Black Panther Party was the cooperative housing, because I was the architect. I was the designer who put that together. But over 22 different grassroots programs that served people in the community to demonstrate all the issues and all the various problems. Right on down to free pharmacy programs, free ambulance programs, free pest control programs. And I organized, following the death of Martin Luther King, 5,000 people across the United States of America in 49 chapters and branches. That's 49 cities and locations with all these programs. And then we got all this popularity, all this support. And J. Edgar Hoover got very, very angry and says, the Black Panthers Breakfast for Children program is a threat to the internal security of America. A Breakfast for Children program is a threat to the internal security.
And that's what led to COINTELPRO?
Yeah, Counterintelligence Program Operation of the FBI. I'm just saying, this is what happened. See, they came after us. They came to our offices. They shot at us. They attacked the office. They didn't come and say, you're under arrest, come out. That wasn't it. They came in shooting in the year of 1969. We have the Watergate tapes for my film, my movie I'm trying to put together. Watergate tapes right after Nixon has been sworn in. Nixon, he's on the telephone to J. Edgar Hoover in a Watergate tape that's now been made public some years ago. Well, J. Edgar, you're going to move on these Black Panthers for me. I need you to get rid of these Black Panthers for me. And say, well, sir, we are moving on it. Well, John Mitchell's going to be calling you, and I need you to run. Yes, sir, says J. Edgar Hoover. I mean, this is the President of the United States of America in 1969. Is he giving directives, et cetera? We haven't even been charged with anything. But in that year, they attacked every other Black Panther Party office all across the country. They blew up the Iowa office, et cetera. In San Diego, when they walked in that morning, the police and the FBI together, they busted the door in. They wouldn't say under arrest and can't shoot, and shot Brother Bell dead. He ran that chapter. You know about Fred Hampton and Mark Clark in Chicago. You know about John Hookers and Bunchy Carter at Campbell Hall. Because Senate investigation hearings against the FBI for attacking us all that year, et cetera. Hey, the FBI admitted that they created a situation between us organization and the Black Panther. They did that. They sent out the false cartoon caricatures depicting one or the other killing their groups, et cetera, et cetera. They created that. And then Wesley Swearingen, a former FBI agent himself who wrote a book, FBI Secrets, South End Press, articulated a point. He says, when that shooting happened at Campbell Hall, where John Huggins and Bunchy Carter was killed, within 40 minutes after it happened, I'm standing in the district office there in FBI in Los Angeles, and a young Black guy walks in and starts talking to this other FBI agent about the shooting that just happened. He says, in effect, it looks like this guy was one of the shooters talking to the FBI. This is the FBI agent documenting this. They came and attacked us. We only defended ourselves. And even in that Los Angeles shootout, that last shootout, December, John Mitchell had said in the beginning of the year, by the end of this year, 1969, we'll be rid of the Black Panthers. December 4, they killed and murdered Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, shot at the Black Panther Party's house, that apartment place, and assassinated and killed him in effect. And 4 days later, they attacked the Los Angeles office. But they and the party members had did what I told them to do, to fortify these offices. And when you fortify these offices, you will network with everybody you can find, every reverend, every politician, every whoever, business owner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that these people are going to attack us because J. Edgar Hoover has said we are a threat to the internal security of America. And this means that they're coming to attack us. And they then, in fact, did attack us all across the country. But that was the last shootout in Los Angeles. Because right after that shootout, a week later, they're already planning the national headquarters in Berkeley. A young white policeman, oh, I love this guy. I love his underground spirit and soul. He stole the plans, the FBI and Berkeley police plans, to attack our headquarters and gave them to our lawyer. Yeah, he lost his job, but he did do that. And the young mayor of Seattle was on television. We're not going to have the FBI in here using our police department to attack the Black Panthers here. These young folks have hospice programs, health programs, breakfast programs in the community. They are assets to our community. And we're not going to have this. And everybody in the country came out against the FBI. Everybody from the NAACP, every organization, even the African Americans Policeman League in Chicago, who were fighting racism in that department, they came out for the Black Panthers against the FBI, for them attacking us, et cetera, so and so on. And there were no more shootouts. There were no more shootouts after this with that Senate investigation hearing. They stopped attacking. See, people try to say we were the cause. No, they came to our offices, our houses, our apartments, and attacked us, and the best thing we could do. I'm chairman of the Black Panther Party. I organized that organization, not Huey Newton. Huey was in jail. I'm the one that taught these party members all across the country in all these chapters to find particulars in the methodology of effective grassroots community and programmatic organizing to unify people's electoral votes to try to take more political seats. Now, everybody was into this game. 50 black folks duly elected political office throughout the whole of the United States of America. And by the end of the 1970s, 7,000 were elected. By the end of the 80s, 15,000 were being duly elected, and so on.
Bit of ground left to cover, though, huh?
Yeah. Yes.
All right. Bobby Seale, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Bobby Seale will be speaking tonight at 6 at the Music Recital Hall at Southern Oregon University, and I very much appreciate you dropping by the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you.
Bobby Seale, the co-founder of the Black Panther Party in Oakland back in 1966.